a parenting seminar. And I've never figured out what to call these because there just doesn't seem to be a good name. So I've just come to this parenting seminar. And last week we looked at some things, but there's a specific passage that we're going to take all of the lessons from. And it's here in Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 through 4. If you're very well schooled in Scripture, these are verses that you have probably heard, your kids may have even memorized, especially the first verse of this that says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right." And so we looked at that last week. And in looking at the very first part of that, there are a couple of conclusions that we draw that are very important to build the foundation on. For example, we learned that children naturally disobey. And the same thing that I asked you last week, has anybody had to teach their kids any disobedience this week? Do you have to teach any tantrum lessons or anything? We never have to do that. By nature, the very nature of children proves the Bible true. And this is what we call in theology, anthropology, where we study the nature of man. And what the Bible teaches is that we are naturally sinful, that we naturally have a rebellious nature about us. And that's not true just for kids, that's true for adults. And so your children will by nature have a sinful heart, they will have a sinful nature about them. And that's not saying they're awful kids, but that's how we are. We know that because both the Scripture teaches it and we see it, we experience it. And so, you know your anthropology. All right, here's a second thing that I really want to stress to parents. And I'm going to come back to this tonight because I want you to understand how this helps you as a parent. And that is that parents don't need to be insecure. We live in a society that really pushes children's rights and that you need to treat your children as equals and they're little people and let them grow up. But if we're looking at that biblically, we've got a very different picture. The fact is that God, the Creator, empowered you as a parent. He said, "I've given you a responsibility." Now, this is not empowered you so you can beat on your kids or so you can make life miserable. This is, you are the parent. You're in charge here. And He has high expectations of you. Your authority as a parent comes from God Himself. And I think it's important to reiterate that in our society because we have often felt stripped of power because society says we need to treat our kids like our equals. And the fact is that God looks at you and says, "I've made you the parent." And we're going to come back to that again. Both of these are under the auspices of a statement that good theology makes you a better parent. If you understand that your children are naturally sinful, it will help you. If you think that your kids are just good and if you wait long enough, the good will come out, well, they will grow up. But the fact is that all of us are sinners and that you have to understand that your children are sinners as well. And often, you know, we do have the academy here. Since we have the academy, we have to really bite our tongues once in a while because we'll have a student do something and a parent will come in and say, "My child would never..." And can you finish it? "Do that." Don't ever say that as a parent. I was talking to somebody and we were talking about the fact that a theologian, might be somebody in here, any sin that man has ever done under the right circumstances, you could do. Our hearts are terribly sinful. And given the right circumstances, a teenager will cheat when he has forgotten to study. A teenager will say the wrong thing. Teenagers will do things. Kids will do things. Your kids will act like sinners because they are sinners. And we have to acknowledge that from the beginning. I always appreciated my dad's philosophy, not when I was a kid, but if there was a question of whether the teacher was right or I was right, do you know who always won? I don't ever remember being able to say it was the teacher's fault and dad said, "Oh, you poor baby." It was always the authority was right. Now, dad was good about it. He would look at it and say sometimes, "Okay, I see what is going on here, but you respect that teacher." He knew that his kids were sinful even before he was a Christian. He knew that we had to be really careful. So good theology makes you a good parent. Now, I gave you an assignment last week. My voice is kind of cracking today. A little bit of, I don't know if allergy or what, I don't feel bad, but can't Can't go up on those high notes or anything. Or maybe I can go on those high notes. I gave you an assignment last week. How many read the what was on the Facebook page, How to Train Your Child to Sit Still? Did anybody read that? Okay, a couple of you. Good. All right. Anybody try it? All right. It's still on the Facebook page. It didn't show up as a picture. So if you go on there, it's on the Keystone Christian Academy Facebook page, and it's also on the Keystone Baptist Church Facebook page. And it's just an article by a lady named Denise Cunningham, and she's saying, you can train your kids to sit in church. Most of the time we say, oh, my kids could never sit there. And she goes through, how do you do that? How is it that you train your kids to sit in church? There are many families that do that. I've never forgotten a friend, Chuck Phelps. He's a pastor out in Indianapolis now. He was up in New Hampshire for years. But Chuck said he was in India, and he was preaching over there, and he said it was a big kind of open area. And as he came out to preach, he said he saw, it seemed like hundreds of kids just running around, and they were all in the front of the group. And then the parents were kind of in the back, and the kids were basically kind of sitting by themselves. And he looked at this and thought, this is going to be a disaster. He said, I was shocked by what happened. He said, when I started preaching, all of those children sat down and listened the whole time I preached. No parents there beating on them or anything, but they had been conditioned, they'd been trained to sit and listen. And he was telling us that story, and he said, you know, it's possible to do that. Well, I think some of you might be helped by that article. There's just training that's involved in that that will help you. Now, let's go on. I'm going to give you another assignment tonight. I put something heretical on the website today. Did anybody go on there and look yet? All right. Did you already see it? Okay. All right. Yeah, I put an article, and I put in all caps. You know, I'm screaming at you. This is not an article I endorse. But I'm going to give you a challenge tonight. When we finish, and if we get as far as I need to, I want you to read that article and evaluate it biblically. All right? There are some serious flaws in the reasoning, and it comes down to either God is going to be right or man is going to be right. And you need to be able to distinguish that when you look at an article like that. All right, so let's go on tonight, and let's talk a little bit more about this matter of child raising, and especially, what do you do if a child disobeys? What are my options for discipline? And we'll get to that tonight, but it'll be continued in 2 weeks. So it'll start tonight, and we'll open up the discussion, and then we'll have to finish the discussion a little bit later because it's going to take too long to do it in one evening. Now, if you'll notice on the screen behind me, I have the verses, Ephesians 6, 1 through 4, and in those I've got four words or phrases in bold. So let me point those out. Children, obey your parents and the Lord. We spent some time talking about that last week. And then the second verse, honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, so that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. And then the third is, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. The King James Version says the nurture and admonition of the Lord. This is just another interpretation of that. We're going to talk specifically about those words so that you make sure you know what you mean. Those are four words or phrases that are real important in this passage. So let's get the first concept here. When we look at the idea of obey, does anybody need a definition of obey? Do you know what it means to obey? Well, do what you're told. I don't think that I didn't even look one up and put it down here because I don't think most of us need any help in understanding what does it mean to obey. All right, so if I look at a child and I say to my child, hey, I want you to go sit down right there, obedience would be to go sit down right there. Now, what we have to be careful of is that our children will obey, but we will sometimes let them obey in a way that is not really sort of partially obedience. Let me put some more words up there. There's instant obedience, which is wonderful, but everybody struggles to do that. I mean, we that's where we want to get to. As a matter of fact, when you look at this, remember that we often, I'm going to use the word symbolize, or we're in the place of God with our parents. We teach our young people how to respond to authority, and so when God speaks, Do we instantly obey him? Well, I hope so. But a lot of times, there are some other words that will describe our obedience. Do you have any of your kids, are there any people in here with children that have delayed obedience? Okay. What's delayed obedience? And maybe I should say, why would a child use delayed obedience? Why would you do that? To aggravate you, yeah, all right. Okay, all right. They don't, and I understand that, but I think there's more to it, Casey. Okay, yeah, yeah. Because they can, yeah. All right. Delayed obedience is, okay, I'm going to obey, but I'm going to stand there as long as I can, and when I finally make a move, then I'm going to obey. I've pushed it as far as I can. And so I'm gonna obey, but I'm gonna delay. Then there's this idea of partial obedience. Partial obedience. Do you have any that do that? Yeah. Your partial obedience is that I'll take as much of that as I have to, but I'm not gonna do it completely. And so they go sit on the second pew, or they go sit on the end of the pew, or they sit on the floor. And it's obedience, sort of, but it's partial obedience. And kids know how to do this, don't they? I mean, they're skilled at this. And then there's the other one, and that's begrudging obedience. You have any that do that? Yeah. I'm going to sit down. And they flop down. And you couldn't say they didn't obey, but it was obvious that there was something wrong. So obedience is not as clear-cut sometimes as it ought to be. We have this delayed obedience or partial obedience or begrudging obedience. And by the way, we do that to God. And God sometimes is as frustrated with us as we are with our children. You said something about, tell me your first name because it's not going to come to me. Todd and Barbara. Yeah, I was going to call you Bill or Bob or Fred, but it is Todd. And I know his name. It's not that. But Todd said, because they can. You know, there's something to that. Your kids train you as much as you train them. My memory's bad. I couldn't remember Todd's name. I was talking to somebody this week. And it was a mom and dad, and dad will tell the child to do something, and they'll do it. Mom has to tell them 5, 6, 7 times. Why? Yeah. About 6 or 7 is where mom will finally flip out. Yeah. And so mom gets this high blood pressure for longer than dad does because the kids just don't listen to mom. Well, there is a difference, and I'm going to get to that tonight too. But sometimes you let your kids train you. You let them go until finally you've had enough. Well, you know, once, I'll give you maybe a reminder, but pretty much there needs to be obedience. And the scripture's clear about that. And God expects us to obey Him. He will graciously repeat things for us once in a while, and He'll prod us occasionally, but He expects obedience. Now, let's go to the second one that was on here. And that's the idea of honor. He said, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. I'm not going to try to deal with that whole middle section, but I just want you to get the idea of honor your father and mother. I do need you to define that. How would you define the idea of honoring your parents? All right, respect would be a great word. Respect your parents. Fear, okay. By the way, in that article that you're going to read on Facebook, remember, you're going to read that? The proverb says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And there are going to be a ton of arguments from secular psychologists that you don't want your children to fear you. All right? I just want to tell you that. either the Bible is right or secular psychologists are right. You know, study the Bible and you're going to find there's a different way of looking at things. Okay, back to where we are, fear. Any other definitions of honor? Respect, fear, anything else? Valerie? Okay, there you go. And what'd you say? Obedience would be another way to define it. Valerie said something important. It's attitude. When I looked it up, it's really the frame of mind with which you obey. It's the frame of mind that you think of your parents. And it's really a right attitude. And the right attitude would involve fearing them because God has put them in a position of parent and honoring them or respecting them because God has put them in that position. And a young person, as they get older, needs to understand that God has placed them in a family with these parents intentionally. These parents are not perfect. You are not perfect. And they're going to have idiosyncrasies that they may need to even avoid. But God has put you there for a purpose. But it's the idea that you should have a right attitude. And so I would ask this question, what can you legitimately expect, or what is the biblical expectation for parents? And I'm going to put this in large, bold print, because if there's one thing that I wanted you to take with you tonight, it would be this: obedience with a right attitude. My expectation for my children biblically is obedience with a right attitude. Now, when are you going to achieve that? At what age? So do you obey with the right attitude now? You're 33. Ask Amber, yeah. When are you going to achieve that, Todd? Yep. And you're still going to be working on that when they're sitting in front of you in church and married with three kids. Now, this is one of those things. It's a continual thing. My children, Junie's still, she's in 11th grade, but my three children, you know, Julia is the oldest one. She's 20-some, and I'll get it wrong if I say. But you're always working on that attitude. You're just thinking, I wish we could refine that a little bit more. But do any of you have attitude problems? No? Good. I'm glad to hear that. Lying, yeah. Yeah, this is a difficulty that we have all of our lives. And so this is an objective for a parent that is a continual objective. And when the Bible gives us this, what I'm looking for in every young person is obedience with a right attitude. But I must realize I'm never going to completely get there. And so I'm going to be developing that in every young person. I'm going to be building that in the 18-month-old. I'm going to be building that in the 3-year-old, in the 5-year-old, in the 12-year-old, in the 16-year-old. I'm going to constantly have to be working through this. And you may get to the point where you get the obedience because they do have a fear. But even those who obey may not do it with the right attitude. Of the two, I found the right attitude the more difficult one to deal with. Any of you find that? You know, when you really conquer this thing about, hey, I am the parent, and you are going to obey. And we're going to have battle that the whole life too, but you are going to obey, but you're going to do it with the right attitude. That's the heart. This is where parenting as a Christian, really the rubber meets the road. Because I can force somebody to do right, but it's getting to the heart that really is difficult. I can put a criminal in prison and I can change his behavior. That does not mean I've changed him. And as a parent, the rest of this passage is really important because I'm not simply shooting for a child that obeys. It's a right attitude and it's a godly attitude. And that is a hard thing to do. That is a parent. You're trying to teach a young person to love the Lord, and you can't spank them into that. You have to show them that. You have to teach them that. But here's what I'm looking for, especially in those younger years. Obedience with the right attitude. When you have a toddler in your house, expect that. That's the easiest time to do it. I know it seems like the hardest at times, but that's the easiest time to do it. I expect obedience with the right attitude from you. And they don't know any better. If that's the expectation, that's what they'll eventually learn to give some of the time, if you'll expect it. Now, let's keep going. Because the question then that will be ongoing is, I have little Bobina here, and I say, I want you to sit down in the pew over there, and she flops on the floor and throws a temper tantrum, and then she gets up and goes and sits down. What do you do? What are your options? Do you spank them? Do you give them a timeout? Do you tie them up? What do you do with them? Tie them up. Okay. All right. Make them sit there longer. Yeah. I think that we could come up with some creative solutions, but we need to figure out what's the biblical approach to this. I think the big question that always comes up is, should I spank my kids? And because this is something that's out there and Dr. Spock said don't do it, so we need to know, what does the Bible say about that? Spanking is by far not the only discipline you'll use. As a matter of fact, if that's the only tool in your toolbox, you are really going to make a mess of things. It's like using a hammer for every job. You need a wrench, a screwdriver, a file. You need different kinds of wrenches. You need a lot in your toolbox. And what Andy said is true. Sometimes you look for a way to say, all right, if you're going to sit there on the floor, then you sit there on the floor. Longer than you planned. And it can be appropriate discipline. It doesn't always have to be one-dimensional. And so we have to be careful with that. But we need to know, what does the Bible say about a spanking? Should I use that or should I not use that? Because that seems to be one of the major things. I have, in a different color at the bottom of this, the last verse. It says, fathers, provoke not your children to anger or to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. I want to take those two phrases that are in bold, and I want you to think through those. The first one is the idea that fathers are to be involved. I'm glad to see we have a lot of dads here tonight. Let me tell you that without question, kids listen to dad more easily than they listen to mom. There's just something about that. I don't know how to explain it, but it is true. Dads can say something and there's a deep voice. Maybe some moms have a deep voice. I'm not sure, but a lot of times dads can speak and kids will listen. Young people will listen. And dads need to be involved. And I think it's interesting in this particular passage that Paul didn't say parents. He said fathers. He was speaking positionally because he said, dad, you're the head of the house. Now, we have some single parents in here. We have some moms. And there are some moms who are doing, and I've seen some moms who do a wonderful job with their parents. They have to figure out how to be dad and mom. And that's one of the wonderful things about having a church family. I felt like I was dad to some kids who had single moms because I could sit down and say, look, you need to do this. And they would listen. But I'm also pastor. And so it's good to have both, but this doesn't mean you, if you don't have dad, you're not going to survive. But dads, let me tell you, you have a natural authority that God has given you that you must not abandon. When you speak, kids are more apt to listen to you. It does include mom, certainly, when he's talking about this, because he's speaking to dad as the head of the household, and it's mom and dad working in harmony. And right here's something that we do run into, that sometimes we have disharmony in parents as to how to discipline the kids. You need to be working together on this. Now, what if mom and dad do things differently? Maybe let me ask it this way. Do mom and dad always have to approach everything the same? Certainly not. No. As a matter of fact, they're going to approach things differently. There were things that bothered me with my kids that didn't bother Christy, that I would expect from them that she wouldn't necessarily expect. That's okay. God gave them two parents. They'll learn from both. Now, you don't want complete, you know, like mom's going to let them do one thing and dad's going to let them do something different, but there are things that you can work together on. And things that dad's going to expect this, and you better do this, and I support your dad. And mom's going to expect this, and I support your mom. Parents can work together on these things and support each other. And that's what this verse is implying, that dad is going to be in the position of authority, mom's going to be working with him, he's the head of the household, and let's make sure that you are involved with your children. One of the most, I don't know that angry, but it would be pretty close, one of the most angry points in my life was one time when we actually had a man here, and their kids were in the school, and the man was here for something, and he was supposed to be a spiritual leader. This was a long time ago, so you'll not guess who it was. You don't know them. But a teacher came and said something about one of the children, and I think he was throwing food, or he was doing something that, you know, needed to be addressed. And this teacher came and said, I need your help. You know, Bubba's out there throwing food. And this guy looked over at the wife and said, go take care of your kids. And I thought, phew. And I restrained myself. But that was one of the problems that they had. He needed to go take care of that, especially in that circumstance. I mean, there'd be times when she might have to go, but in that situation, it was clearly he was passing off the responsibility of discipline to his wife. And he needed to go take care of that. And here in this passage, it does say, guys, you have a natural authority because God has given it to you. Now use that. And he defines that. He says, I want you to bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And that phrase means, I want you to guide them. I want you to set them on the correct course. You are steering this ship. This is in conflict with what much of society will say again, because you are, as a Christian parent, supposed to set them on the right course. You're supposed to point them in the right direction. That's your responsibility. So when he comes to this, he says, now, let me give you specifics about the course that you're to put them on. I love this passage because he's giving you a whole bunch of information. He says, Dad, I want you to get involved. Mom, you're going to be right there on the driving with him, the two of you together, and you're going to bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. That word discipline, nurture, training, and then the instruction of the Lord, I want you to think about those two. Tonight we'll just look at the first one, and that's where we'll finish in just a minute. This word is one that simply means the discipline and instruction of the Lord. It is a general word that means the training and educating, but it includes correction and chastisement. So here's the Bible saying, Dad, I want you to train them. I want you to bring them up in the training of the Lord. I want you to train them. Well, what does that mean? There's a wonderful passage in Hebrews chapter 12. I mentioned this last week that one of the studies that I do is taking people through a passage where God as the Father, and we find out how does He parent. Well, there's a passage describing God as a parent in the New Testament. And it applies specifically to what we're talking about tonight. Now, if you want to turn there, you can. It's Hebrews chapter 12, and it's verses 3 through 11. I'm going to put it on the screen. I'm going to put it on in a New American Standard tonight. If you want to follow it in the King James, you're welcome to in that version. But I want you to see kind of an indention here that's important. And some of the modern verses indent the parentheses or the quotations from the Old Testament. So here's how it starts. He says, and have you forgotten, or you have forgotten, the exhortation which is addressed to you as sons. Sons of who? God. So here's the writer of Hebrews, and he's saying, you guys have forgotten the exhortation that was given to you as sons of God. Well, and what he does is he quotes from Proverbs 3, verses 11 and 12. Well, here's the quote. The quote is, my son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproved of Him. For those whom the Lord loves, He disciplines, and He scourges every son whom He receives. Now, I've highlighted four words there, Here's God as the Father. And in this passage, the writer is emphasizing something. What is the writer emphasizing about God as our Father? How would you say that? Say, wait 5 seconds, and 5 seconds is up. Somebody's got to answer. I'm not even sure who. There you go, Barbara. He disciplines us. Yeah. When you look at God as the Father, this writer is saying, hey guys, don't forget that God disciplines His children. And He reproves us. Now that's a verbal reproof. Hey, stop that. And then he uses the word discipline again, and then he uses a word at the end, and he said he scourges every son whom he receives. What's a scourging? Have you ever been scourged? Maybe you feel like you have. But what is a scourging? It's being whipped. It is literally, in this case, the word means to take a whip and whip the back of a person. Now, we don't like to think of God. I preach on God's love Sunday, so I'm not, God is a very kind, gracious God. But here's the writer saying, God loves His children. And because He loves them, He disciplines them, and He reproves them, and if necessary, He'll scourge His children. He will make life really hard for you. If I were to ask, have any of you ever been scourged by God? Has God ever whipped you into shape? I know some people that He has, that He's allowed some things to happen to, usually natural consequences of their sin, and God is saying, you get back in line, and He scourges you.
Well, being that He allowed His own son to be scourged, I would certainly think it would be terrible.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Yeah, literally, His son, He allowed Him to be scourged, and He says, I'll let my children be scourged in order to bring them into conformity. Now, this writer in Hebrews takes this passage and he says, now I want you to understand something for this. And he's talking about God's discipline, but notice some of the things that he says. It is for, or because of discipline, that you endure. Because God actually disciplines you. He does take the time to discipline you. You keep going. God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom the father does not discipline? This is a rhetorical question. What father would have a son that he wouldn't discipline? I can't imagine that. But if you are without discipline, of which all have become partakers, then are you illegitimate children and not sons? If God doesn't discipline you, you're not His child. Because anybody who has a natural child disciplines their child. I'll keep going. Furthermore, we had earthly fathers to discipline us. This is why God gave us earthly fathers. And I'm glad God gave me a dad who would discipline me. We had earthly fathers to discipline us, and we respected them. We had an honor, a fear of them. Shall we not much rather be subject to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time as seemed best to them. Sometimes your time with your toddler seems extremely long. Some of you have that right now. You really only have your kids for a short time. And you ask any of the older people in here, Joyce? Yeah. I'm shocked that my kids are gone. You don't have them very long, but for a little while, you have these kids, and we discipline them as it seems best to us at the time. We're not going to achieve perfection, but we have a goal. We want to discipline them for a purpose. But He disciplines us for our good, that we may share His holiness. Now, you have to remember this. All discipline, for a moment, seems not to be joyful, but sorrowful. Now, how many of you are sorrowful while you're disciplining your children? Okay, how many of you love to spank them? We need to have another conversation, all right? You know, we say to the kids, you know, this hurts me as much as you, and they don't get that at all, you know. But really, we're not standing up here and you're saying, I got to discipline my child again. You know, I don't enjoy this. I don't want to do it. All discipline for a moment seems not to be joyful, but sorrowful. But why do we do it? Why would a parent continue to discipline their kids? Yet to those who have been trained by it, afterward, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness. Clearly, discipline has an outcome that is positive. And he said, God does this to us. And the interesting thing is that the writer of Hebrews is saying, look at human parents and see how they do it, and you'll see that that's how God treats us. We have to go the opposite now in our society because we've missed the boat on this. God is saying to you, you should be disciplining your kids. And that's how God disciplines you. And there's a you know that you don't enjoy it, but you have a goal. You have a purpose. And because you have a purpose, then you're going to take them through discipline. If you look at this passage, you'll find that there are four things that it shows us. Number one, discipline is proof of love. Number two, discipline trains them to be obedient. Number three, discipline is clearly an educational process. And in this case, it fits them to share in God's holiness. And number four, it produces the fruit of righteousness. It produces what we're wanting. And he said, discipline is a critical part of that. We have to get to that. Now, I made it. I know that I've rambled on here tonight with not a lot of interaction, but this is where I want to get to because I want you to think about something. That passage teaches us some critical lessons about whether or not one of the tools in our toolbox, and again, I want to say not the only tool, but one of the tools in the toolbox is, do I ever spank my kids? Well, Dr. Spock, this is from the internationally acclaimed Wikipedia. In many cultures, parents have historically been regarded as having the duty of disciplining their children and the right to spank them when appropriate. However, attitudes in many countries changed in the 1950s and 1960s following the publication of pediatrician Dr. Spock of Baby and Child Care in 1946. So I've never read this, but 1946, and he had his case, and he advised parents, treat your children as individuals. Whereas previous conventional wisdom had been that child rearing should focus on building discipline, and that, for example, babies should not be spoiled by picking them up when they cried. And he goes on and explains, and Wikipedia doesn't have this exactly correct, but the idea was before this that my goal as a parent is to discipline my child. So, and by the way, that's a biblical goal. You impose discipline on children so that they will gain self-discipline. The objective of discipline is self-discipline. And if you don't impose it, they will probably not get it without some other catalyst in their lives, whether it's military or prison or something like that. But here was Dr. Spock saying, you know, I don't think you need to do it God's way. I think there's a better way. And in reality, you came to this place where society said, we can do it better. We can figure out how to do this so much better. We don't need to do it the way God said to do it. And I think all we have to do is start to look at our culture after that, and we begin to see there are some problems. Now, there are always problems in culture, but we see some real problems cropping up. And we'd have to say that much of it is because there was a change in parenting philosophy at this point. On the website, or on Facebook, not on the website, on Facebook, I've put an article on there. And this is the link to it. If you need it, I can get it to you. But basically, it's from Parent Magazine. Now, I do not recommend Parent Magazine philosophically for this topic. But I needed one to tear apart. Casey? Okay. Yeah. I'm trying to think where I could put it that you could get it. I'll email it to you. Do I have your email address? Probably. Okay. I'll email it to you. Okay. If anybody else needs it, just email me, douglas.wright@keystonebaptist.org, and I'll email it to you. That's probably going to be the best way to do it. I put it on the website, but it's kind of hard to explain why I'm putting an article on there for that purpose. I can really explain it on Facebook. But go on there, and here's what I want you to do. In this article, I read a bunch of articles today. It's fascinating to me. But in this article, they're explaining that there's this debate about spanking, and they take four parents' views. And the one is, I would never do that. One is, I used to do that, and I don't anymore. One is, I do it, but I don't really want to. And the other is that I spank my kids. And then they have this short paragraph of their psychologists that evaluate what's wrong with the philosophy this person has. But there's something very specific that I want you to look for. And that is, how does what they are saying compare to what we studied tonight? There are some major biblical flaws in the reasoning. And I want you to see that. I want you to understand that we're either going to take God's way or we're going to take a society's way. And after you read that, then we're going to pick that up again. And we're going to talk about specifically the forms of discipline. And what does it mean to discipline and how do we discipline kids? Now, that's actually going to happen in 2 weeks, and I'll tell you why. Next week, I decided to do this because I think it will be beneficial for you. We have a leadership conference here for teenagers from a bunch of different schools on Thursday. And on Wednesday night, Matt Williams is going to be here. Matt Williams has spoken in our church before. He's an older gentleman. He's just really fun. He will be here. A guy named Dan Anderson, the president of Appalachian Bible College in Beckley, West Virginia, will be here. And Sam Horn, who is the director of the seminary at Bob Jones University, they're all going to be here. And so I've asked them, I haven't gotten a confirmation from Sam Horn yet, but I've asked them to come in and just do a question-answer session with the parents. I want to ask them some questions and let them give us some biblical answers to it. I'm going to have some questions. And I'm going to start it because we don't have a lot of time, so we want to get right into the meat of some things that we'd like to know. But I think you'll find it interesting, and there's going to be time for you to ask questions as well. And we'll give you the parameters of that next week. But I think it'll be helpful. Then the following week, the last week of the parenting seminar, we'll come back and finish this so that we can make sure that we give you all the information about it. Okay? All right, we're going to pass out the prayer sheet, and then after that, questions or comments from you, and we'll make sure we get the questions answered. So let's go ahead and pray, and then we'll get the sheet passed out, and then let you ask questions. Lord, thank you for the time, and I thank you for your word and the direction that you give us. I pray you'll help us to implement it in a proper way. In Jesus' name, amen.